Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 262 of the Mighty Whites podcast. I'm Jack, as always, joined by KC.
Now that.
How's things, mate?
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah. About as good as it can be at the minute when you can when you're thinking about the end of the season.
Yeah, it's very stressful. I had at work today, I had a nice conversation with a Reading fan and going through our various stresses. Safe to say he was quite envious of the position we're in and why I'm stressed.
Have they got enough points to get out of it, even with the points deductions, or have they got dragged right back in?
I don't know, but when I finished the conversation with him, I did say, I hope you find better owners soon.
Then 9 points clear. They should be fine. It's actually quite good going, considering everything. So we'll get into football in a sec. This is football, but it's more important that we should probably start off just talking about Stuart Dallas. He announced his retirement this week. No one was shocked, but it still made me really sad.
Yeah, I'm sure it right. If between the video and the statement, you didn't even well up a little bit, you are dead inside.
Yeah, the statement didn't. I mean, when I read it, I went, "That's nice," but it didn't really get me. The video did. I was.
Is it when Liam hugged him?
Yeah, it was. It's exactly what it was.
Come on, pal, you got this.
It's weird talking about Stuart Dallas because, for the most part, when you look at him as a footballer, there isn't something massively standout about him. But he's just good at everything.
He's very handsome.
Well, yes, he is, but...
And
ask any woman you know.
Yeah. He's got the looks, the accent, the nickname. It's all coming together for him. I think he summed it up best in the video he did to the fans when he's saying the expectation of the Leeds United fans is hardworking players. And he was very much one of those that encapsulated that. I think was probably... It's always odd with someone, especially someone who comes in as a winger, because you don't normally put the words hardworking and winger together in a sentence, but it's very much what he was, and then just evolved into James Milner, just playing every position.
Yeah, like when he came in, I mean, obviously he was still a hard worker when he came in, but he was a more stereotypical winger when we first got him. He'd come in from the left. He was always, by the standards of a winger, surprisingly good in the air at the back post. But
him and Pelayo Maria, mate, like the two of them. Oof.
Yeah, that's a hell of a. I didn't know whether you were a real thing or Football Manager, but you weren't Football Manager.
I went Football Manager. He is a real player, though, so it's okay.
Yeah, it was sort of basically for a couple of years, he was a bit of an also-ran. Like, you liked having Dallas in the squad. No one had a problem when he played, but no one was, like, bigging him up as some amazing footballer. And then Marcelo Bielsa happens.
And like suddenly he happened to that entire team.
I always think the thing that I like most about Dallas is that on those occasions where it didn't go well, it just improved him. Because I remember, like, the first time that he played for us at fullback, he was awful. And then he switched to the other side. And then he got decent at it, and then he got switched to the other side. And it was awful for a game and a half. And then he could just do it. And when first time he went into middle of midfield, it didn't really work. And then 2 years later, he's winning our Player of the Year in the Premier League playing central midfield. he's just he just works his bollocks off, and he must have a really good mind for the game to be able to play in all of those roles and not have it be instinctually first time amazing, but to be able to take a game or two games to get used to it and then be able to do it. That's almost more impressive than just having a natural ability to play everywhere.
Yeah, I think when he first came in for me, because it's probably only a couple of years after, I looked at him as not quite Rob Snodgrass, because he wasn't the fastest winger. I think when we used him was very much a, you know, cutting it off the wing, but didn't have the free kicks, didn't have the goals to go with it. And you're kind of like, you know, he's decent. But again, like, he was in and around these squads, and you weren't, that if Dallas was on the bench, you were like, oh, that's fine. He starts, grand, cool, whatever. And then, yeah, like you say, he just, I won't say found his role, but he spectacularly didn't find a role. He just plugged a gap. Is it Paul Reaney that did that in the Revy team? It was just wherever a player was missing, he will be there. Or was it Paul Madeley?
Yeah, Madeley, I think. But I was going to say, the thing with Dallas, I'm genuinely really sad that his career's ended like this, because he'd worked so hard to get to that level. Like, he said himself that, like, there was times where the Premier League seemed miles away. And he'd worked that hard to get there.
It was very much the case for Leeds United as well.
Yeah. But to get there and have it finished like that was such a shame. And it was, because to me, I haven't gone back and watched the tackle. I was at the game, and in my head, to be honest, it seemed like Dallas was late. But it just seems to have been one of them things. It's just caught him perfectly. You couldn't do it again.
Yeah, and I think, given, you know, you'd very often hear Phil Hay reporting that Dallas was playing through various small injuries for a good few years. It just seemed to battle through absolutely everything to keep playing. And you know, he was a player I think we definitely missed last season.
You miss a player like that every season. I mean, it'd have been so good for us to have now, because how many times have we been struggling for a right back or for a left back?
Or to be an option in the middle of midfield now, because all the midfield.
We have four very good centre mids for this level, but we've had one at centre back and one at right back half the season. It'd have been nice to have Dallas, who could have either played right back and moved Gray forward, or just be an option in the middle himself. Early in the season, when we were playing Jamie Shackleton on the right wing, he might well have played there, or Poveda starting, or like he'll be. I was really hoping, but I knew that he was never going to be at Leeds beyond this season as a player. I was just hoping he could get back, play a couple. The absolute ideal world is Leeds get already promoted and he can just play the last game of the season, show that he's fit, and then he'll be able to get a club for next season. But it's not going to be there. He's already said that he's talking to the club about a role going forward and that his family wants to stay in Leeds. So, go coach for 16s. Take over the 18s in a year. see what happens. Because you know, our youth teams always do well, so they get put. So the 21s coach gets poached to take a manager's job. The 18s coach becomes the 21s coach, and we need an 18s coach.
Yeah, you'd like to think you can find a role at your club for someone like Stuart Dallas. It's the only half decent thing you could say about this is at least this happened 2 weeks shy of him being 33.
Yeah,
and I know it's the last 2 years of his career. Yeah, it's whatever happens now, he will always have Man City. You know, he will always have that promotion. You know, there are so many players who won't get to do and experience half of what he's done with his career. And as awful as this is, and I can only imagine how it feels for 2 years to sort of go into work every day and watch everyone else do what you love doing. Yeah. But, you know, at least he will always have those accomplishments that will live there forever.
Yeah. Obviously, you've mentioned it there. So, I mean, we'll probably talk about a few memories, but my favourite one does have to be Man City away. Obviously, COVID pandemic, it was shit. And it was shit for us as well, for the most part. But my daughter was born during all that on the 1st of April. 2021. So her first game was sort of the Sheffield United game at home, which was a couple of days later. But I watched that without Ava in the room. A week or so later, Leeds go to the Etihad. And, you know, they're not going to do us for it now. Me, you, and Ava watched that game. in my living room. We did sit apart, but we watched the game with my daughter. So her first game, sort of quote unquote watching Leeds with a dad, was Dallas scoring twice at the Etihad. And you know that she's gonna be all right with football when she didn't get upset when we jumped up in the air in the 91st minute and screamed the fucking place down.
Yeah, there was a brief moment early on where you're like, right, there is a newborn child in the room. We need to, let's be reasonable here. But yeah, when you score a goal like that late on, that very much went out the window.
To be clear, Ava did not go out the window.
Just swung her around over my head.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love the goal at Old Trafford.
Even though it meant nothing.
There's some really odd. I found the whole Old Trafford 6-2 defeat generally hilarious. Like, because of what happened in the first 8 minutes, anytime anything happened after that, I just started laughing. You see Stuart Dallas score a goal like that, and you just go, why wouldn't you score a goal like that? That's going to mean absolutely nothing, but is a belter.
Yeah. if I was just looking at, but I mean, obviously, that is my favourite one by a mile for obvious reasons. I love the one against Charlton on the last day of the season from the little nutmeg pass, which is such a great team goal. Just brilliant passing, play the way all through, and just a little outside at foot flick around. I'm trying to remember, because it will have won probably our goal of the season. Was it Birmingham away?
There's Birmingham away. Volley. There's that Birmingham away, and there's the goal at Stoke away as well, which is really nice football as well. That was just pace. I didn't know that man had.
Yeah, from the one
flies through Pablo from right back. Just mad, like insane that we just had this team that just had boundless energy. to have your right back just do things like that. It's no wonder you saw team like the whole thing of even the teams, like you see the teams the week after they play, or typically like the Tuesday or Saturday after they play, as would drop points because they were absolutely knackered. Like, and you just there going, yeah, because our right back after 70 minutes is just running the length of the field, and their left back's looking going, oh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's favourite goal under Bielsa, full stop. That Dallas one away at Stoke. But football is just immaculate. But yeah, I'm just trying to think of if there's any other ones that we should definitely bring up. I'll tell you what one I always had a soft spot for. You know the one away at Blackburn? We won 2-1, Pontus Janssen scored a late header.
Hmm.
Just be chesting it down on that side of the box and just driving it in left-footed. I always really liked that goal as well. It was one of my favourites. But he scored some very important goals in the promotion season. Probably ones that were biggest for the actual getting a result. He scored a last-minute equaliser at home to Preston, which, you know, that's obviously a point gained. And he got the equaliser in that awful game against Luton, which was one of the first behind closed doors ones.
Yeah. His highest scoring season for us was in the Premier League.
Yeah, didn't he end up with 8?
Yeah, 8 goals. That seems about right for us getting promoted that first year.
Yeah. Well, I believe that in that run of the sort of in the Bielsa run, these aren't the exact numbers, and the exact numbers I think were in various places, I just can't remember the top of my head. But it was something like before the injury, he had played 121 of 122 games. And I'm guessing the one he missed was Derby.
That's what I'm looking at here. Like, he's 45 games in the promotion season. So, yeah, I assumed the same thing, that it was hungover at Derby with Matthias Klick.
Well, is that when that video's from where he gets, where he's jumping around in the street with them fans and he's, like, getting in a taxi? And they're going, Stewie, mate, you're steaming. And he's absolutely battered. You know, the, oh God, we need to make sure this lad gets home level of drunk.
Protect this man at all costs.
But he's going to be out on the pitch at half-time against Blackburn, which means I'm going to have to sort of...
not go down. Sit.
I'm going to have to say, well, that's the problem is we're unbeaten at home. And when my dad goes for a smoke, I go with him, even though I don't. And... But I want to clap Dallas as well. What do I do? Hopefully it's like 4-0 at half time, and then I can just stay and it will be fine. The only other thing that I was going to bring up, which is the less emotion-based thing. Do you think that he was originally going to wait till the end of the season to say this? And because the last couple of games have gone a bit wrong, he's thought, giving him a bit of a do it for Dallas thing to focus on might not be the worst thing here.
I would call you a very cynical person and agree with you.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it probably also, it's probably not also the worst thing to do in terms of it not being buried at the end of the season, regardless of what happens, that it kind of, I think this way it gets treated with the importance that it should be.
If you do it last day of the season and we've gone up, it sort of gets missed. If you do it last day of the season and we don't go up, everyone's too sad to give a shit. And then you've got playoffs to come after, so you can't really say it.
Yeah. Also,
the same problem happens in the playoffs. Either it's a good thing and no one cares, or it's a bad thing and everyone's too sad.
Yeah. Also, he did start against Derby. I've just checked. Oh, he was one of the few.
Oh, he must have had a knock at some other point. We have had a comment of Andy Will saying, why did it go so wrong for Bielsa? Now is not the time. It's just not.
Hang on, let's just... right.
We're 20 minutes in, we haven't even talked about the Sunderland game yet. I've got to go back to work after this.
At what point does someone ill-advisedly throw out the word naive? Nave. It's one of those things. It's really sad, but I really hope that whatever he wants to do now, he can go and do it. Whether it's coaching, whether it just by the sounds of things, he wants to stay in football. Even happier that he wants to do it with Leeds. I hope he can find some peace with that and kind of enjoy the next step of his career.
Yeah. And on Saturday the 4th of May, let us know where you are, because I'm sure you'll be out in town. Love to buy you a beer, too. It says a lot. He's one of everyone's favourites. Like, as much as everyone respects Liam Goober and he's been a captain for years, he does have people that don't like him. Same for Bamford. Same for just about everyone. So even Ayling, there's some that really went. No one really had that with Dallas. There were some people who went, he isn't quite technical enough to be a proper centre mid in the Premier League. And he isn't quite quick enough to be a winger in the Premier League. And things like that, but everyone likes him.
God, people just can't be happy with things, can they?
Yeah. Andy wrote another one there saying, psychological gesture, raise the spirits of the lads and Coopers will be the Saints game. Depends how the Saints game goes, but in theory, you might well be right.
Well, famously, the Saints game didn't go so well for Liam Cooper last time, so... I think the last one,
I believe you, but I've never gone back and watched that game.
No, none of us did. Connie got married that day, and when we went 1-0, what was it? We went 1-0 down in about the first 6 minutes, and we went, well, we don't need to watch this.
We were lining up, taking some photos, and went 1-0 down already, and we just went, ah, fuck it, I'm not going to look. And we did look, but we didn't look as often as we normally would.
No, there was a magician.
And his name was Stuart Dallas.
I do think it'll be very interesting to see how we sort of deal with this come the end of the season now, because there is a lot of me would like there to be a sort of in name only at this point, a Liam Cooper testimonial. Ideally, what you want it to be is the last time you kind of get all those players back together of like Cooper, Ayling, Dallas,
yeah,
Bamford, like depending on where we are next season, you know, there is every chance Bamford may be on his own, Bamford might go, and that's the end then, really.
Yeah, you would think in the summer
it's Jamie Shackleton is carrying the legacy.
Yeah, in the summer they will do that game, you would think. Just hopefully it's following promotion, because if it's following promotion, everyone will be in the best mood and you'll get 37,000. Everyone will turn up. You probably won't get click because the MLS is a summer league.
Yeah, I think you could do it.
He'll try a bit. And as much as we all want him to, one, I don't think Bielsa would come anyway. It just doesn't seem like him. But two, it's the Copa America in the summer. And he's the manager of Uruguay.
You can work around that. It's fine. No. Fly back in between group stage matches.
Venezuela aren't going to scout themselves.
This is why he's got a team.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, and you kind of to use wrestling terms, you fantasy book the testimonial of just thinking, Gaetano will come back, Pablo will come back, Mario Melchior will be there.
Because he's always there.
He was always there. You know, it'd be... You kind of want to see the like a Leeds past versus present type thing or something like that of getting a load of like all the players that kind of Dallas, Ayling, Cooper, Bamford all played with back together as much as you can. Don't even time the game. Just let them have a kickabout.
Well, speaking of not even timing the game, Leeds versus Sunderland. Normally, I would say this at the end, but I know that we should have had two penalties, but adding 3 minutes on to that second half might be the single most baffling decision I've seen this week. And I've seen West Brom get a penalty for a handball that was 4 yards outside the box and hit the player in the face. In fact, I think it was Lee Peltier.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. And I still think adding 3 minutes on might be the worst decision I've seen this week. Just the subs was more than that.
Like, it's one of the few times where, not because people are bored and just want to go home when they've held up a number like that, where people go, excuse me?
Yeah, that, I'm also, it round me in the stand, it turned to anger within about 10 seconds. But the initial thing was just confusion going, now, nah, Big Lee's read that out long. That must have said eight. Like, there is no way that that's what it was. But, right, should we do performance first or left first?
Let's do performance.
Okay. So, basically, Leeds nil, Sunderland nil. Leeds had one shot on target, which I don't even remember, to be honest. What went wrong with that performance?
I would say to summon my inner three lions, we weren't creative enough, we weren't positive enough. And my God, the passing map between Roden, Ampadu and Melier was off the charts.
Yeah, I looked at that passing map. You know, obviously the lines get thicker the more passes happen. And I was looking at it going, damn boy, she thick.
thick.
We were. I don't think it was negative as in we were playing to just keep the ball and not take chances. I think that that was a proper sign of nerves. We kept turning passes down that really had a chance of creating something to play the simple ball, or sometimes panicking between the two and just giving it away.
Yeah, I found it very frustrating, and it was, I think one of the issues we had was credit to Sunderland, because I think they did a good job of making sure Grove and Kamara had very few opportunities to turn on the ball, which should force you to play longer. And instead, we kind of got scared by that and thought, well, we need to keep the ball. Mm-hmm. But you were just like, we're going nowhere here. Joe Bellingham had zero interest in closing down a central defender. That he just was not bothered for that.
The close down could do a little bit. They were willing to let Roden basically do whatever he wanted with the ball.
Yeah. You know, it very much felt like cut off Gruev, forced them to go along, and we opted not to.
Yeah. My dad has a bit of a bugbear about it, that we don't hit balls over the top enough. And I think there's a middle there. I think he probably wants us to do it more than we should, but Leeds do it less than we should. There's probably, because we did it a little bit in the second half and it did get us into better areas than we were able to get by playing our way through. And I think it becomes more important when you are not playing well. Like, if you're not, especially, the weird thing was we didn't do any in the first half. in the half where if you knocked it over the top, the ball would hold up in the wind.
Hmm.
So it would have been easier to get in behind in the first half than the second half. And it was the first half where we refused to do it at all. I just think that we couldn't get the ball through midfield at all. The closest we had to penetrating really was when Roden ran forward and tried to play a pass, or when Ampadu tried that like driven low ball into Lutero or Bamford. And none of them really worked. Dan James wasn't in the game. Somerville was in it a bit more, but it was either he came inside or he tried to find Firpo going outside him. And there was some decent little bits of interplay there, but very few and far between.
Yeah, I think from certainly from defence, Firpo made a few attempts to try and play forward when he received it. He seemed to be a bit more on the front foot than Archie Gray was when it would go out wide to him. But again, it just felt a bit static. And I think it was frustrating because every now and again, one of those low driven passes would get through to Somerville and you'd be in the final third. Like, and all of a sudden you feel a bit of anticipation, you know, around the ground of, all right, we've actually got somewhere now. And it was kind of frustrating after the first couple of times we did that, we didn't try it a bit more.
Mm.
But yeah, you know, going back to the balls over the top, you get to a point where you're thinking, right, but that we're not playing out here. You've got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
The only saving grace is it felt like second half we pushed the tempo more, but that wasn't matched by creating all that much.
No, I mean, we were better second half than first, but I wouldn't say there was loads in it. I mean, Sunderland, to their credit, you know, they had three centre-backs and then Equa and Dan Neil were fairly just sat in front. They did that thing where they packed the middle and I was deep, and we never really looked like breaking through them. Bamford wasn't in the game much. Routier did not have a great day at all. When Joseph came on, good energy, but didn't really get in the game. And again, coming on with only, you know, 82nd minute, it's a bit too late. Same for Peru. When Nonto came on for Kamara and we went to sort of a 4-1-4-1, as Gruev was on his own in midfield and Routier and Nonto were both playing sort of as 10s. For about 5 minutes, that did sort of perk us up a bit. But truth be told, we never looked like scoring through good play in this game.
However,
Dan Ballard gets booked in the first half. And he gets booked. Well, he doesn't get booked the second time he goes flying through the back of Bamford when he should have. He then does it a third time and gets booked. Later on, off the ball, Bamford's running through down the goalkeeper. As KC mentions all the time, the obstruction will no longer exist in football. He just steps across and takes him out. And then they're like sort of having a bit of handbags with each other afterwards on the floor. One of those things that's a buck in each. Nothing. There's other fouls that he does. Nothing. Was it him on the first handball with the like lean and sort of elbow it wide? Because that one, I think, probably is handball, but I can understand that one not being given. Because your arm is by your side, even though you've leaned into it and sort of done it on purpose.
Yeah, it's a bit cynical, but at least you can... There's the ability to plead ignorance a bit with it.
Mm. Now, the second handball. This is two penalties. Guy comes in, he's got Roden's shirt. The bottom of the shirt is up above, is up at his shoulders. That's how much of his shirt he's got. And this one's 09, isn't it?
Got hold
of him. But Roden, to his credit, is still favourite to win that ball because despite being clearly fouled, he's strong enough to get ahead of him. So 09 just punches the ball away. Now, it's shit refereeing. Just like when Bamford scored with his elbow, it's shit refereeing. But we've had like two of them in our favour all season. And we've had like, I know all fans feel like this, but we, like it's true. We have had like 10 of them against us. And the difference is like Bamford's one didn't really, like it wasn't the thing that makes you, I think Leeds are winning. I mean, we win that game 3-0 and it's Rotherham and we would have won that game. We're winning that game anyway. I don't think it affects the points total. But this one maybe does right at the end of the season in a promotion chase. Lee Peltier putting in that leg-breaking tackle on Dan James that isn't given as a penalty in a 1-1 draw earlier in the season. That affects us and loses us points.
Hmm.
We have been... I'm sure that there'll be... There's probably another team out there that has had more of it than us. But we have had the rough end of some really shit decisions this season. And when the race is this tight, this I mean, cannot fathom how the fuck the lino and the referee have managed to not see this. It's I was in the fucking East Stand upper, and it's a crowded box, and I didn't have a great view, and I thought it was handball.
I was at the game with my team, so we were sat second row of the lower East Stand. Fantastic leg room, lads. Fantastic leg room.
How bruised is your knee slash shin?
Oh, mate. Absolutely dreadful. The only saving grace is being sat next to children does mean you can sort of take some of their leg room. But a perfect line to see it. Absolutely perfect. And the only thing I had to do was stop myself from swearing.
Yeah.
Because I typically wouldn't mind, like I don't mind swearing around other people's kids at football. It kind of happens. But you know, I've got to maintain some decorum with my own team. So yeah. You just said between that and the penalty that was given in the West Brom game, it does really make you wonder what the linesman's there for, apart from throw-ins.
Yeah, which they don't give. They watch which way the ref points. And which, give it. The one in front of the East End was just guessing. They had no idea. But I still genuinely, I am more baffled. As terrible as the decision as it is to not give that handball or the shirt pull, because it's two penalties. That if you don't see something, you don't see it. You can't not see Patterson in their goal got the hurry up from the ref on every single goal kick in the second half. That he was warning Sunderland players for time wasting constantly. And just didn't add any of that time on. And I do think that is more baffling than missing even the most obvious handball in the world. If you don't see it, you don't see it. He's seen the subs happen. He's seen the, you need to get on with this lad, stop time wasting, because he was the one giving the warning. How is managed to give three, like, if there's a referee's assessor up in the stand, that must be the thing that they're going, well, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. So anyway, he's got a Premier League game this weekend. He's been promoted. I mean, it isn't promotion because he'd done Premier League games before, but he's moved up the tiers based after that performance.
I can't remember if I mentioned this on the last podcast. There was a review into big decisions in the Championship. I believe this was last season. And it was found that referees in the Championship got 85% of big decisions correct.
Mm.
Now, I know... 85%
of big decisions correct at the same time, Andy Zane. 75% of games, topic of conversation, dodgy refs. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Can I just say as well, the way he gave the offside decision after the push on Dan James in the box was the most theatrical wind-up decision I've seen from a referee in a long time. Because he blew for it. And, you know, because I didn't see in the build-up. So he might have been offside. But he definitely didn't have to tease the decision out for as long as he did.
See, I didn't really notice that. I sort of went up to appeal for the penalty and looked over and the flag was up. So I just went, all right, fair enough. That makes it easier. The only thing that sort of, it doesn't make it good. It just makes it feel more like a missed opportunity. Ipswich 0, Watford 0, Millwall 1, Leicester 0.
It's a bit both sides of the coin, isn't it? Like, it is a missed opportunity, but at the same time, at least we've done it when they've dropped points as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously everyone's been saying it, but, you know, again, Andy, he's well on the ball. I've got loads of things that he's put back in time with our conversations here. Is it pressure on the top three? Form has dropped off. I mean, Leicester have, well, they've gone win-lose. Ipswich have gone lose-draw. We've gone draw-lose. And in the midweek games, none of the three teams scored, which, looking at the table and how often they do, it's pretty... I'll tell you what it was. It was a fucking hell of a midweek for Southampton.
I suppose with them, with two games in hand on us and Ipswich, it does give you that little bit of, there's still a chance. Like, I don't think they will, but it must be a bit of a motivator to know you've got six games left when the other two teams ahead of you have both got four. You just kind of hope now, as you look at it, it's again that double-edged sword of, we should beat Blackburn because they are a poor team. Like, that's why they are where they are in the league.
We'll come on to them a bit more later, but that poor team put five past Sunderland at their place.
Yeah.
If you want some context to how bad, because I said it on our Twitter, the draw against Sunderland to me felt so much worse than the loss away at Cov did. Losing away at Cov, it's an away game, and Cov are a good side. So I was like, it's a bad result, but Whereas Sunderland now, while they have the potential to be a lot better, Sunderland right now are not a good side, and it was at Elland Road, and you can't not win that game.
Yeah, that's the other thing now. You've got a team who are outside the relegation zone, still need probably another win to be safe in their last four games. Have one of the league's top scorers. I don't know if he still is, Sammy Smodix.
Smodix is right up there. Adam Armstrong also was, and I didn't see who scored Southampton's goals. Oh, yeah, Smodix 23 is free clear of Armstrong.
So you're always going to have that. But at the same time, they've lost 20 games. That's a lot of games to lose.
Yeah.
They're not good.
No, they're not.
But we are panicking.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we should win this game. There's no doubt that we should. But pressure does funny things. And it's really hard to know. Because obviously, they won 5-1 at Sunderland, but they then drew 0-0 with Southampton. Again, good result, really. And you think, they've hit some form. They got beat 5-0 away at Bristol City. They were 2-0 down at half-time, and the manager made four half-time subs. Like, that's how bad they were, and they ended up losing 5-0. So, I've no idea what to expect.
I mean, that's the other thing for them. like their running is not great. So they play us. After us, it's Chef Wednesday at home.
Who are fighting for their lives.
Yeah. And then they play Coventry, and last day of the season, they're away at Leicester.
Yeah, so it could be.
They need points as soon as possible.
Yeah. Was going to do accounts first, but as we're on the topic, we may as well just keep going through it. Tactically, it's not that interesting because it's probably 4-2-3-1 v 4-2-3-1. Gruev is going to have to... you would expect Leeds to have all the possession, so for the most part, it'll be same as usual, but Gruev will probably have to start a little bit deeper because Smodics will play off the front and he's their main danger. And it depends whether we're brave enough to just have Ampadu sort of step out to deal with him and have Rodon 1v1 and give us an extra man, or whether we want to drop Gruev back a little bit to help them out. If we do that, then it should give Firpo a bit of licence on that side to sort of step in and help. When I'm looking through their team, I mean, Ainsley Pears in goals, he's young, so maybe he's got some potential, but when I've watched him, he hasn't looked very good. Obviously, he dropped a bollock against Ipswich. That Tyrese Dolan that plays on the wing's pretty decent, and that Andrew Moran, who I think is on loan from Brighton, he's the young Irish lad. He's meant to be very good. But there isn't really out in that team that scares you other than Smodic.
No, it's a very... I was going to say average team, but no, it's not even that this season. Like, it's just... They're not good. But you've just got to hope that... This is very much one of those now... Go get an early goal. Just settle your nerves a bit.
Oh, God. The amount that we'd love an early goal is...
They are at a point now, because of where they are, that they need to get a win. And I know you're away. I know they're away at Leeds, but they need to get a point, and I don't think they're good enough to defend their way to a point from 90 minutes in that.
You wouldn't think so, but it's all about whether we're good enough to break down the team that's doing that.
Because the other side of it is, I look at, if they don't get something from this, there is so much pressure on them in that Sheffield Wednesday game. And if they could get, like, if they can get a result out of this, it takes so much pressure off them in that game. But whether, you know, whether it'll be a case of they'll play to, you know, keep it tight for 80 minutes and then maybe go for it at the end, or whether they will just sit deep for 90 minutes and try and soak it all up and hope for the best. But you'd like to think at this point that between Somerville, James, Routaire, one of them will find a way through.
Well, from the press conference today, there was no new injuries.
Oh, that's good.
Do you think there'll be any changes?
I feel like Connor Roberts might still be a little bit away from starting. Because I think if you're playing Connor Roberts, you probably want him to be ideally on for at least 70 minutes. And I wonder whether he'd be there yet. Because if he was, again, I could see us trying Gruev and Gray in the middle.
I think that he's going to do it this time. I will do. I think Roberts comes in for Kamara, Gray into midfield, and I think Nonto starts ahead of Dan James.
I do. I think Nonto starts as well.
Other than that, I think everything else will be the same.
Yeah, I think there'll be the usual calls from people for Joseph to start, but I can't see him doing it now.
I said on the previous one, I said if he's going to do it, the Sunderland game is the day to do it. Once he didn't, well, I mean, he gave that press conference where he vehemently pointed out that he was basically not going to do that. Very shortly after we released that podcast.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I can understand the calls for someone to start over Bamford, given his form in the last few games. It's fair enough, but it's going to be Bamford. If everyone's fit, it will be Rutter, it'll be Somerville, Gruev, Roden, Ampadu, Purpo, Melly Engel. It's only that sort of triangle on the right hand side that I think is going to change for this one.
Yeah. And again, that team is more than good enough to beat Blackburn.
Yeah. Are Plymouth good enough to get a point against Leicester tonight?
Oh, I don't even know anymore. There's not a lot. It's one of those things of, like, in theory, no, they're not. But the fact that Millwall beat Leicester really makes you just think, well.
Yeah. By all accounts, Leicester were terrible in that game. It sounds like they had a similar thing to us, where they had plenty of ball, but they didn't really do enough with it. And it looks as if they did more than we did with it, to be fair, but still not enough. In my head, I still want to say, well, Plymouth are good at home. But no, Plymouth were good at home under Stephen Schumacher. Hmm. They've been shit at home. They've lost like six in a row since the managerial change. So I'm not holding out much hope, but then again, I wouldn't. I didn't hold out much hope for Millwall either when they did get some. And then Ipswich are at home to Middlesbrough and Southampton are at home to Watford. Watford no longer owe us one. They got a point off us, so they owed us getting a point off someone else. And they've done that now. They also nearly won it from like 50 yards at the end, which would have been a hell of a thing to happen. But, Middlesbrough are capable. Like, they've got plenty of good players, and they still haven't. It's not going to happen, but they are still in the playoff hunt, so they'll still. You'd think they'll be well up for it. But you don't see Ipswich messing it up two in a row at home. And Southampton are the ones chasing with the least pressure, so I think they're just going to, like, win games now. And it's up to everyone else to not mess it up.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you just watch these games and I have no... I think I said before, they've got to play Coventry, haven't they? I think in a week's time or something like that.
That game ends up being midweek because it was supposed to be the same week as covering the FA Cup semi.
Yeah. But it's just the thing of looking at certain games where I look at Ipswich and say, oh, they'll win that 4-0. And we'll play the same game and I think, well, we might lose that. So such is my psyche at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm the optimist.
You know what? With how long this has gone, I've got to go back to work. Screw the accounts. They're terrifying. We spent £120 for every £100 earned on player costs, wages and amortisation. You can't do stuff like that. But Premier League, EFL, PSR regulations, we're okay on that. Just means if we go up, we can't go mad. If we don't go up, we will have to sell. If you want to listen to proper things, Kieran Maguire was on the Ought to Know Better podcast earlier today. I listened to it while I was working. It was a good listen. Just go listen to that. It's way better than you're going to get out of us. So, Connie has a 2-1 win against Blackburn. Alex has 3-1. Leeds do better when I'm negative. I am going for a 1-1 draw.
I'm going to get a 3-0 win.
God, I hope you're right. And I hope it's that after, like, I hope it's that after 4 minutes.
You want it to be a classic mid-season Farker performance of absolutely batter a team in the first half, really take your foot off in the second half.
Yeah, rest your legs, lads.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. We just have to win. if Plymouth can get a result tonight, massive bonus. If anyone gets results for us, it's a massive bonus. But like the odds are still having Leeds as favourites for, from obviously Leicester are the big ones, but we are still one of the two favourites. I'll just get of an actual price. Like automatic promotion, Leicester are 1-9. We're 4-7, Ipswich are 5-6. Southampton 18-1. A little bit tight on those odds, to be honest. Should probably push Ipswich and Leeds out a little bit. We've got four games left. What do you think we need?
Wins. All wins. I mean we're third now as well. So
yeah. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that we need at least 10 points in four games.
Well, I mean, I said that before the last game, didn't I? That it was four
I did
in
say,
a draw.
I did say a while ago that we'd need 102 points because I didn't think anyone was going to mess up.
Yeah. Here we are.
But,
oh, God.
Getting a win against Blackburn just so they can get out of this little bit of a funk would make a huge difference.
Yeah, take a little bit of pressure off the next game. Take the nerves out.
Oh, it will. I mean, it won't take the nerves out, but it might reduce them by 5%, which would be something. Might stop me coming out of the game limping because I've been pushing my feet into the floor so hard because of stress. Then getting up at the end and going, "Oh, my leg won't work." That can't be good.
The ground and a jack seat looks like the foot equivalent of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I don't know why you go to these matches barefooted, but
no, it's weird.
Whatever gets us results, I suppose.
Yeah, I did it once and we haven't lost since. So
yeah.
I did have that. I was just getting a bottle of pop before kickoff, and there was like two people waiting at one till and nine at the other, and I had to go in the 9-1 because that's the one I always go to, and we haven't lost yet at home this season. So pain in the ass it was, but yeah, that will do us for episode 262 at Mike White's podcast. I don't know when we're about. It'll be early next week, hopefully. But I've been Jack, see you.
Oh, that's my phone.
Here's Steve.
I've been Casey, have a good one.
In a bit.